You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Hello, James. I haven't talked to you in ages. How have you been?
I've been great. Thanks very much.
It's good. It's nice to have you back. How was your holidays? It's been a while.
Nice to be back. Great vacation. 2 weeks by the beach in the middle of some of the best weather ever. Been back at work a few weeks. Of course, pretty busy with things like Rata and Waitangi and the first sitting week and so on. So, yeah.
And how was your recent trip to Waitangi?
It was amazing. I hope that we establish, spending the 5 days there as a convention, because it just allows us to kind of meet with a lot more kind of key groups and individuals, and it also means that it can be fairly spacious, so that if something runs over, you've got the capacity to actually allow it to run over and take the time that you need to take, rather than to kind of have to cut something short because you've only got, very limited time there. And I think that is important. I also think, this idea that we kick off the political year with this very kind of spacious reflection on who we are as a country and where we've come from and where we're going was terrific.
Definitely. And so surely this isn't your first trip to Waitangi, yeah?
No, this was my fourth.
Your fourth?
So I've been every year as a Member of Parliament.
And so you mentioned the spending 5 days thing, but is there any other sort of key differences you found between this trip and the last three?
Well, I mean, there are the obvious ones that you read about in the newspaper. So having moved the Pōwhiri from Te Ti, the Lower Marae, up to the Wharirunanga, I think that did make a significant difference to the style of the event. And sort of have that actually up on the treaty grounds, I thought that was really significant. Most of the rest of it you would have been reading about in media reports, which is that it just had a very, very different tone to it. Whether we can maintain that tone, I think, as the Prime Minister said, will determine, be based on whether we can actually deliver on the promise and on the expectation. And if we can't, and if we don't, then I would expect that, we might get hauled over the coals at next year's Waitangi.
So can you tell me a bit about the tone and sort of like what it felt like to you?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I have to say, that there was kind of an emotional component to it, because it really was, it felt to me like a kind of a proper moment where we all did engage with this big question about about who we are as a country, and I really appreciated that opportunity. It felt like a real privilege to be a part of that for me personally, and of course it was for most of us, it was our first time going there as government ministers as well, and so the conversations that we were having with people were about possibility and what is it that we're going to be able to do to turn around some of the issues in this country. And again, there's a real feeling of privilege to that.
And so you mentioned the sort of feeling of how we or who we are as a country. One of the issues that's come up about Waitangi Day this year is that the Labour Party has not yet admitted that Māori never ceded sovereignty to the Crown. And this is something that the Green Party has done, and that you even like you did in your speech, and you stated it on your website. Do you think it's an issue that the Labour Party has not acknowledged this?
Well, I think that's up to them to have that conversation. I can only speak for the Green Party, not for the Labour Party. And for me, the issue is fairly cut and dry. The Waitangi Tribunal did some terrific scholarship. I trust the quality of their work. And they did a big piece of work which came to that finding in 2014. So for me, it's kind of fairly straightforward. It is a very difficult question about what you do about that, of course. How do you then kind of reform your institutions to reflect that? That's a very tough question. But to me, it's simply a historical fact.
And how do you think that influences New Zealand's identity?
Well, we are one of the very few countries in the world which has a treaty between two sovereign peoples that forms in many ways the kind of foundation stone of a modern state. And that's, I think, actually, that's makes things kind of pretty interesting for us here at home. But actually, I do think it's something that other countries in the world are starting to look at, saying, well, that, you know, that's pretty interesting. Should we look at what's going on there? And maybe are there some lessons learned for how we do things in our own country? So I see it as a contribution to the rest of the world as well.
Mm. And so you said it's pretty cut and dry, the fact that Māori have not, like, ceded sovereignty to the Crown. Would you like to, in the future, see the Labour Party admit that as well?
Well, like I said, I think it's up to the Labour Party to respond to that, not me.
Okay.
To me, like I said, you know, I was simply following the finding of the Waitangi Tribunal, and they do very good work and had some extremely strong scholarship that underpinned that. So, you know, like I said, if that's their finding, I accept their finding.
Mm, definitely. What do you think New Zealand would look like as a society if it was sort of openly acknowledged that Māori and Pākehā exercise equal but separate sovereignty?
Well, I do not know, actually.
Yeah, it's a very tough question.
It is a very tough question, that's right. And there's kind of symbolic components to that, right? So I think that Māori would feel significantly kind of more acknowledged, you know, in their place in our country, in this modern state of ours, if at least that kind of historical fact was acknowledged. But like I said, the tough part is, you know, what does it mean in reality? What might we do about that, right? And I, like, that's a very big question. It's a very broad question. And I actually think that, you know, Calvin Davis's new portfolio of Crown Māori relations starts to point in the direction of saying, well, actually, getting beyond just the treaty settlements process, what does this relationship look like? How does that work in the future, especially in a, you know, post settlement world? And the Prime Minister herself, in her speech at the Pōhiri, you know, pointed to the real tough questions for our country, which is, why is it that Māori are so badly overrepresented in prison statistics or in kind of, you know, health statistics and education statistics and employment and, you know, all of these kind of particularly social indicators. That actually those are the questions that we really need to focus on and to say, you know, those have got to be the priorities.
Mm, right. Well, so moving on, as Statistics Minister, you've expressed that you want to include questions on sexual orientation and gender identity in the 2023 census. Can you tell me about this decision?
Yeah, I mean, this has been an issue that's been around for a very long time, right? I think as far back as 2006, there was a campaign to try and get research about the Rainbow community into the census way back then. And over the past several years, Stats New Zealand has been working on methodologies. So they've attempted to, they've actually tested a whole series of different ways of gathering at least some of this information. And they were unable to develop a statistically robust method that worked for this year's census that starts next month. And so they didn't like it, but they essentially had to kind of pull the questions for this census. But the research that they did over the last few years is informing a new set of questions that we're adding into, for example, the General Social Survey. And there will be kind of other questions that go into other surveys as well, which are statistically robust and do mean that we are going to start being able to gather that information. And hopefully what we learn from that will be able to refine to the point that we're able to include those questions in the next census.
Mm, and so why do you want to include the questions, though?
Well, I think there are two main reasons, right? One of which is actually we need this information about this part of our population, because the government uses this data to make significant public policy and funding decisions. So if there's a portion of the population, like particularly in healthcare, right? So if there's a portion of the population that you just don't know a great deal about, then you're not going to be able to make very good decisions for public policy, provision of public services, you know, funding and so on. So that's one reason. The other reason is that actually this is a community that has been marginalized throughout history, and people want to see themselves reflected in the data. So the fact that there are no questions in the census when there are questions about most other aspects of life, I think makes it sort of reinforces that perception that they're, you know, they're being marginalized and left out. And and so I think it is important to acknowledge that actually both of those things are drivers. We've got to collect this information somehow. And actually, when it comes to counting who we are as a people, which is what the census is about, people want to be able to see themselves in there.
Right. And do you think this will be an accurate representation of LGBT plus people? I mean, like, some people may be scared to include this sort of information about themselves in official government documents. Do you think this could skew the data at all?
Well, that is one of the reasons why we're trying to gather this information via other means. So the census is a questionnaire. And so, you know, what we get back depends on the people who are filling out the questionnaire, obviously. The general social survey is a representative sample of the population, but it's done via an interview, so person-to-person interviews. And that means that, you know, the people who are doing the interviews can get through some of those. You know, if people have got any questions or concerns about those kinds of questions, or they don't understand the questions, they can ask the person who's interviewing them about that. And I think that means that we'll be getting much more accurate data than we would if we were gathering the same kinds of questions via the census, at least at this point where we are now.
Right. So I talked to Rainbow Youth Executive Director Frances Arns about this, and she said that the census is a great start, but we need sexual orientation and gender included in all national surveys, and for organizations that use these data to consider how to serve the rainbow community as a whole. What else can we do to ensure rainbow communities are represented in our data? Surely we can do more than just like a census 5 years from now, yeah?
Well, that's what I'm saying about the general social survey. So we don't have to wait for the next census. We're actually already going to start gathering this information via these other surveys in the interim.
Is there anything else we can do?
Well, we are going to start using questions around gender identity and sexual orientation in some of our other surveys. And so, you know, what she's saying will actually hold true. Like, you'll actually start to see that showing up in a number of different surveys. And the good thing about that is that most of those other surveys have their own purposes. And so we'll be able to start getting much more granular and useful information than you do from a, you know, something that's very broad stroke like the census. So we should start getting a much richer picture of this population over the course of the next few years.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. It was great to talk to you as usual, James.
Good to talk to you too. Thanks for having me back.
Have a great day.
See ya.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.